Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we're going to talk about education benefits for our veterans and an organization that helps disabilities and check in with the Minneapolis VA. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Mankey.
When people think about the military, they often think about service members deployed overseas. What is unique about the National Guard is their additional roles. During Super Bowl 52, more than 450 soldiers and airmen supported security operations and law enforcement agencies. In 2017, more than 110 Minnesota soldiers and airmen were activated for hurricane relief efforts in Texas, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. In June of 2017, the Minnesota National Guard supported the Minnesota State Patrol on locating three missing paddlers in the Boundary Waters canoe area. Also, in December of 2017, we opened our armories to several communities to shelter Minnesotans during extreme cold weather. With a force of more than 13,000 strong, we are proud to serve the great state of Minnesota and our nation.
Thank you, General Mankey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. My co-host with me today in the studio is retired State Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham. And Doug, we've got a special guest for the first half of the show today. And that is Eric Jackson, who is the Provost and Senior Vice President of Academic Affairs for Minnesota State University, Moorhead. Mr. Jackson, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Here. How's everyone this afternoon?
We're doing well, sir. I'd like to start. I understand that you spent some time in the United States Army.
Yes, I did. I did 1 year in community college, and then I decided to join the service. I joined the U.S. Army and went to Fort Sill, Oklahoma for field artillery training. And then right after that, I went to Fort Benning, Georgia for airborne training, got my parachutist badge, and they sent me right back to Fort Sill, Oklahoma. So, and then after that, I did some time in Korea, and I re-enlisted again for a second time, and I changed my MOS to Military Intelligence, 96 Bravo. And I was in Fort Huachuca, Arizona for a while, and then I was moved to Fort Hood, Texas, and that's where I closed out my military service. And after that, I decided to go to college full-time. My family moved up to Fairbanks, Alaska, where I got my bachelor's degree in criminal justice, and then I moved to Pullman, Washington, and got my master's in criminal justice and my doctorate in political science. And went to Missouri from there and became a professor. So,
sir, it sounds like you invested a large part of your life in the United States Army and getting yourself educated in a position where you could become provost and senior vice president of academic affairs for Minnesota State University.
Yeah, it has. It's been a wonderful journey, and due to all the benefits that I received while serving in the military, I was able to leverage that to get my education. And when I became a professor, I used those skills and experiences to explain how things were here in the country. I taught international relations in some classes, so I was able to rely on that. And of course, I taught criminal justice for 15 years. And then I decided to become an administrator. And I became a dean at Tarrant County College in Fort Worth, Texas, and served there. And I oversaw a fire academy, a police academy, created programs to serve veterans. I created a workforce program that recruited veterans to come into our fire training program, transferred their military training into college credit, and eventually created a job opportunity for those veterans that were transitioning back from the service. I also was a radio host, believe it or not, for 1 year on a show like this, KVCE, 1160 AM, and really communicating to the veteran community what education can do and what education opportunities were available.
Well, great work, sir. Doug, he sounds like he's got more experience than a command sergeant major.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. You know, I also joined back in 1987, and obviously our careers went a little bit different direction. Mine continued through 2019, and I'm just wondering, you've got all this experience under your belt. You've spent some time, you know, in Texas and Alaska and Washington. How would you end up coming to Minnesota then and getting to Minnesota State University, Moorhead?
Well, before I came here, I was a dean in Michigan at Fair State University, and I served there for 3 years. Again, overseeing criminal justice, overseeing education, and overseeing digital media and our ROTC program. And I leveraged that experience when this opportunity here in Minnesota Moorhead came open. It was a great opportunity. I visited with President Ann, who's the president here at the university, and had a chance to just have a good conversation with her, meet the team, and I fell in love with MSUM over here, and they offered me the position. I happily accepted and been here going on 3 years now.
Very good, sir. We're speaking with Eric Jackson, who is the Provost and Senior Vice President of Academic Affairs, Minnesota State University Moorhead, on Minnesota Military Radio. Mr. Jackson, we got to get to business here a little bit. Can you tell us about Minnesota State University and what programs that you have up there that are attractive to veterans and military-connected families?
Yeah, well, you know, Minnesota State University is a very special school. We have about 5,076 students right now currently enrolled. We have over 80 different programs and a variety of different avenues for veterans to be interested in. We offer criminal justice, project management, nursing, business and administration, finance. So many degrees that would be very attractive, we believe, to veterans. And we also have a veteran services office here at Minnesota State University. And here we have a Northwest Regional Coordinator. Aaron Johnson is our veterans resource personnel in that office. And he was a veteran and also part of the Guard. And he's down there ready to meet and greet and serve veterans and connect them with their many resources that they have available to access education, pay for education, not only for veterans, but for their dependents as well.
So, sir, if some of our listeners are veterans and they're interested in Mankato State University Moorhead, all they have to do is contact your Veterans Service Office and they'll help them from A to Z?
Pretty much. Aaron is here at Minnesota State University, and so is Gail Smith. And I can give you some contact information later, or they could just visit Minnesota State, MSUM.edu, and type in veterans, and all that information will come up for them.
Very good, sir. I think our listeners easier to remember MSUM.edu. And, sir, how important, you've been through a lot of education, a lot of positions, been in the Army. How important is education and getting a degree or some type of certificate in today's world, in your opinion?
You know, in today's environment, people are questioning whether or not education is as valuable as it once was. But having experienced being a veteran, transitioning, having a family, and trying to make different career moves and getting what it is that you want out of life and be happy, I still advocate that education is the most important equalizer that you can have as an individual in this country, whether it just be for your own satisfaction to grow, expand, be able to talk about different topics, or be to get a skill in a field that you love and want to do, and maybe retire and so forth and things from there. But you got to have an education, and I'm not just saying that because I'm from the educational field. I grew up in Saginaw, Michigan, and I knew what it was like to live without an education. It's hard driving, and I really think that education is very important today, has always been, and I will encourage every veteran that has an opportunity, especially if you have benefits that can help you pay for some of this, take advantage of those, get the education you want, grow your family, support your family, and if you're not going to use it, provide that benefit for your children. I have a brother-in-law, retired 34 years out of the Marines. He didn't need his education benefits, but his wife and his two kids were able to benefit from that, and they are doing quite well in their lives. So I'm a strong advocate for education here.
So, sir, and can I assume that your folks in the Veterans Service Offices up there will help our veterans apply for those education benefits as well?
Yes, they will, and show them all the ways they can access their benefits as well. And on top of that, they also show them the many scholarships that we have that can further support them. So we have plenty of ways for veterans to support their education, pay for their education, and get the education they want, both in person, if they want to be here on the campus, and it's a beautiful campus, or online.
Thank you, sir. We have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to speak more with Eric Jackson from Minnesota State University on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. My co-host in the studio today is Doug Wortham, and we're speaking to Eric Jackson, Provost and Senior Vice President of Academic Affairs from Minnesota State University Moorhead. Spent some time in the United States Army, spent a lot of time getting a higher education, and served at a number of institutions, and now he's up at Minnesota State University Moorhead. And Mr. Jackson, I see here that you've also been named to the Minnesota State Task Force on Law Enforcement Education Reform. Could you tell us a little bit about that, sir?
Yes, it was a great honor to serve on that task force, and that was right after George Floyd's death here in Minneapolis, and we thought because MSUM, Minnesota State System, trains about 80% of the law enforcement in this state. And so we should have a voice in there. And so we got a task force together to reevaluate the curriculum, the professional development, and have discussions about how things could be changed for the better, both in our degree offerings, our continuing education offerings, and also with the post board. And so serving on that task force, like I said, is very a very distinctive honor, and we had a chance to make those things, those proposals. We proposed them to our chancellor, and right now I think they're being moved forward to the state for further discussion.
Sir, it seems like law enforcement here in Minnesota, all over the state, are in need of some serious reinforcements. Is that something that your task force is talking about?
Yes, it was a concern for the task force for the ability to have enough law enforcement to police and serve the communities here in Minneapolis. It is still an important thing to have, and every community needs law enforcement, but they need a well-trained, well-educated law enforcement in their communities to serve them and then protect them as well. And so here we were able to change some of our curriculum, continue to strengthen our programs, and provide great education to the officers here in the state.
Sir, historically here in Minnesota, I think anyone that's grown up here knows that there's law enforcement training available up in Alexandria. Do you also provide the same training at Minnesota State University Moorhead?
Well, yes, we do. We offer a bachelor's degree in criminal justice with an emphasis in law enforcement, and that law enforcement classroom piece is done here at MSUM, and then we partner with Alexandria to do the hands-on piece where it's the firearms, tactical driving, and other things that are needed to really do the job of policing, and then make very good police officers for our communities.
Sir, this is Doug jumping in here, and it's great to hear about your selection to be on the task force. And I just want to go back to that for one quick minute here. Education, we've seen this transformation in our police force, and I'm just wondering if through that experience in the task force, I mean, what did you find? What is that like? That one thing that you really noticed we truly needed in the new direction of our training for our future police officers?
You know, the one thing that stood out to me, and I mentioned it while I was on the task force, is leadership matters. You know, the leadership of those agencies, it matters. And the young people coming up through the ranks and wanting to be leaders of those agencies, they need good training in a variety of different areas. They also need good training on how to lead their officers, as well as how to lead an organization and how to be responsive to the community. So I'll say leadership matters.
You know, it's interesting you say that. I spent a lot of time in the military, as we spoke earlier, and a lot of time in different leadership positions. And one of the things that that I've often spoken about is this difference between leadership and development. We need the development, right? That those things that help us to be better at the job that we're asked to perform. But that leadership training is so important because that's how we interact with others, and that's how we take care of those around us that might be our subordinates or our peers.
Yeah, that's very true. And we notice that in organizations, especially organizations that are challenged financially, they focus their professional development on their personnel, and they forget to really direct it towards the leadership, too. So they also have to be included as that professional development happens.
We're speaking with Eric Jackson, Provost and Senior Vice President of Academic Affairs at Minnesota State University Moorhead on Minnesota Military Radio. Sir, we've got a lot of people coming out of the service and want to use their education benefits to get higher education, and there's probably a lot of them that had some law enforcement experience in the service. Would you say that if they want to follow that up and get into civilian law enforcement, if they come up to Minnesota State University, you can help them accelerate that development?
I'll say yes. We'll figure a way out. We have many avenues to figure out how to translate that military training into college credit and lead to a degree and move them further along or accelerate their ability to move through training and through education.
And, sir, I just want to follow up. We touched on this in the first segment, but you have a veteran service office up there, and they have all kinds of resources available, and they can also help the veterans apply for benefits. Your veteran service office up there can show them all kinds of ways that they can afford to get back to school and get it done.
Absolutely. Aaron Johnson, I'll mention his name again, and as you visit with him, he'll maximize your education benefits, determine eligibility, and navigate the application process and troubleshoot any problems you have getting enrolled here at MSUM.
So, sir, for our veterans, is he the place to start when contacting Minnesota State University?
Yes. You can come to our webpage at msum.edu, and you can type in Aaron Johnson. It's Aaron with two A's, Johnson, and it's you can also reach him at aaron.johnson@statemn.us.
Sir, I'm going to ask you for an opinion here. You've been to a number of higher education institutions and worked there. How does Minnesota State University Moorhead compare to the rest?
I'm a little biased. I found my home here at MSUM, and I love it. I like educational campuses that are more what I call winter campuses. You know, I was educated in the Northwest, and I just, for some reason, like the cold. And when winter comes, that's my favorite time of the year. And this is a beautiful campus in the wintertime and throughout the year, too. And it's a great leadership team, great faculty, staff, and wonderful students here.
You know, and I don't think we can emphasize it enough, especially for those that have served or are currently serving, the number of benefits that are available. And I know we've already mentioned the service office that you have up there. And I just want to make that point again is our service members, don't let those benefits go to waste. Utilize them. You've earned them. You deserve them. And get after that GI Bill. And, of course, even the Minnesota State GI Bill and other educational benefits available.
Very true.
And Mr. Jackson, I was going to a follow-up question about the campus there at Moorhead. How would you compare a little smaller campus to the larger campuses in terms of the personal interaction they get with their professors and the other students and the quality of education?
Well, you know, in comparison to larger campus, MSUM is known for its personal brand and personal, I would say, hand-holding touch and making people feel like family. This campus is easy to maneuver. You'll have real connections with the faculty, a chance to even do research as our faculty work with students to get them involved in research. And those students actually get published peer-reviewed papers before they leave here. But there's a lot of opportunities to connect with faculty, be mentored by faculty, and understand really what it is about your field. And that's very important because, you know, at the end of the day, when people graduate from here, I always say, you're leaving here prepared to do something to people, and you need to be well-educated and well-trained, and our faculty can do that.
Sir, we just got about a minute left. I wonder if you've got any special message for veterans and our listeners all over Minnesota that are listening to us today.
Well, first of all, I just want to thank you for your service to all the veterans out there and their families as well. And I also want you to seriously take a look at MSUM, and you can find us at msum.edu. Look at our programs, many ways you can get access to your education. Contact us, and let's talk about how we're going to move forward and help you achieve your dream.
Very good, sir. Thank you for taking some time to spend with us today.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
That was Eric Jackson, Provost and Senior Vice President of Academic Affairs from Minnesota State University, Moorhead. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to talk to an organization that helps veterans with disabilities. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now, here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
Have you served honorably? Are you a Minnesota resident? And are you interested in higher education? If you answered yes to these questions, you may be eligible for education benefits in Minnesota. The Minnesota GI Bill program provides post-secondary educational assistance to eligible Minnesota veterans, non-veterans who have served in the military, and eligible spouses and children. The purpose of this bill is to get Minnesota veterans back to work. The plan starts with education, and the first step is finding the financial assistance available to get them there. For full eligibility requirements, visit MinnesotaVeteran.org.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is T.J. Kreitzer, who is Vice President, Director of Operations of We Defy Foundation. T.J., welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hi, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
T.J., I understand that you served some time in the United States Air Force.
I did. I went to the United States Air Force Academy, started in 1995, graduated in 99, commissioned as a second lieutenant, and from there went to pilot training, flew F-16s in Korea, the U.S., and had an Iraq deployment. And then after that, went to Shepherd Air Force Base to teach in the T-38 aircraft, and then joined the reserves from there and finished out my time as a liaison officer for the Air Force Academy, retired in June of 2019.
As a lieutenant colonel.
That's correct, yes.
Sir, when and where did you get interested in flying?
You know, when I was a kid, I played a lot of video games, and the first thing that really got me into flying was a video game called Red Baron, and it was a World War One flight simulator, but it got me interested in military aviation, and from there, I got into World War II aircraft, and then, you know, into later aircraft, and into the Vietnam era and into modern day fighters, and built a lot of models and things like that, and just kept getting more and more interested. When I was in 10th grade, my mom sat me down and asked if I would like to fly. And I said, I don't know who does that. Like, that's, how do we go about doing that? It's like being an NFL player. I don't know how we would accomplish that. And she said, have you heard of the Air Force Academy? So she kind of told me what that was. And, said, you know, your father and I think your grades are good enough for you to go to college, and we don't have money, so maybe you should consider applying there. And I was the first person to attend and graduate college in my whole family, so I left Cleveland and went a different direction from the rest of my family history, really.
Congratulations, sir. Did you, back in those days, did you need to get some kind of congressional help to get to the Air Force Academy?
You did. I had a nomination from John Glenn to West Point, and from Steve LaTourette, who was my local representative. So at the time, John Glenn was U.S. Senator. And I picked the Air Force Academy, and had I not gotten that, I would have gone to West Point. But I really, really wanted to fly a fighter, and this was the most direct path to doing that.
The stars were lined up so that you could get that done, sir. Congratulations. You mentioned Shepherd Air Force Base. Back in 1971, I was there for some education when I joined the United States Air Force, just before they sent me over to Cameron Bay, Vietnam. It was an interesting base. I imagine they've upgraded it a great deal from the time you were there when I was there.
Well, you know, it's funny because my father-in-law was in the Air Force. He enlisted right after high school in the 50s, and he went to Shepherd as well. And so when he came out to visit me once, he came on a base with me and looked around. He said, yeah, this is nothing like it was when he was there. So,
well, some of those bases just keep on keeping on. And it was a good place to go to school and learned a lot there. And so, sir, you served for 20 years and retired. And how did you, I understand you got interested in jiu-jitsu. Where did that come from, Colonel?
I did. So when I left active duty and joined the Air Force Reserves about halfway through my career, I had a little more time on my hands, and we moved to Minnesota because I also got hired by an airline. So there was a gym nearby me that had a mixed martial art program, It was mostly conditioning, pad work and drilling and technique, so not fighting, but I thought it looked really fun, and I had time, so I got into that, and I'm a naturally very competitive person, so after a little while, I wanted to get involved in maybe the sparring and fighting aspect, but because of my employment, it didn't seem like that was maybe the greatest fit, so my coaches said, hey, why don't you try grappling? But jiu-jitsu is a ground sport. It's more like wrestling with submissions, like chokes and arm bars and things like that. So the concussion risk is much lower, and it just seemed like a better pairing for a hobby with my career. And in 2015, I kind of ditched the boxing gloves and went full in on jiu-jitsu, and I've been training that ever since.
Jiu-jitsu, that was a hard one to figure out how you got from there, but when you say you're competitive... Being a former F-16 fighter pilot, that kind of fits, and then getting into jiu-jitsu. Good way to stay in shape, I would guess.
Yeah, it's the fitness aspect of it is incredible. And, you know, it's a sport where you start wanting to take better care of yourself. You start eating better. You try to get better sleep. You drink more water. It's a very holistic opportunity to improve your health. And to be involved in a community that is full of like-minded competitive people that share a warrior ethos with you, even if they're civilian. It's just something that's part of that community, and it extends all the way through it.
We're speaking with retired Air Force Lieutenant Colonel T.J. Kreitzer on Minnesota Military Radio. And, sir, I understand jiu-jitsu led to, or was the catalyst, that led you to We Defy Foundation.
Yeah, that's correct. I used to train, and I still train on the road sometimes, and I was training in a gym in Chicago and met a veteran in the locker room after class that was struggling with leaving the military. And in speaking with him, I have a psychology background and kind of a layman's interest in counseling and trauma recovery and things like that. And in speaking to him, he said, you know, this talk was really helpful to me. Maybe you should consider volunteering somewhere. And that kind of put a bug in me. And then about 6 months later, I found out about We Defy Foundation, which is a nonprofit. It's volunteer run, and it sponsors disabled combat veterans to train jiu-jitsu as a therapy for their service-connected disabilities. And there was a seminar in Minnesota that I went to for jiu-jitsu, and the beneficiaries of it for a fundraiser portion was We Defy Foundation. So that's when I found it. And from that point on, I said, I have to be involved in this. This is exactly the opportunity that I want to have to give back to the people that served. And that's how it started.
And, sir, do you live in Minnesota now?
I do. I live in Lakeville.
And does We Defy Foundation have an office here, sir?
We actually, our headquarters is in McKinney, Texas, but we have affiliated gyms all throughout the country. And we've got about half a dozen of them in Minnesota where we've had sponsored veterans in the past where we pay their tuition for a year to help them reacclimate to society after the military and hopefully give them a new tool set to help them with the challenges they might be having.
Sir, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk more about the We Defy Foundation. We're speaking with retired Air Force Lieutenant Colonel T.J. Kreitzer on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking to retired Air Force Lieutenant Colonel T.J. Kreitzer about the We Defy Foundation, where he serves, and he's a vice president and director of operations. And Colonel, we talked about your career, an F-16 pilot, and then you got into jiu-jitsu. And just before we took a break, we were talking about a gentleman, a disabled veteran you met, that introduced you to the We Defy Foundation, and you decided to volunteer and go forward. Can you tell us about the foundation, We Defy Foundation, the mission, and who they serve and how that all works?
Sure. We sponsor disabled combat veterans with an 80% disability rating from the VA and an honorable discharge on a DD-214 to train jiu-jitsu. We have found that a lot of veterans, when they leave the military, have a little bit of trouble reacclimating to civilian life. So by pairing these veterans with local gyms near them that train jiu-jitsu, they become part of a community that helps them to combat isolation that they might be experiencing, you know, get back into shape. And there's just a lot of incredible benefits from this practice that I think complement more traditional types of therapies for things as serious as PTSD or anxiety and depression. I think at its best, this foundation has saved people's lives because of the way we help them reconnect once they leave the military.
Now, Colonel, I'm curious. I don't know the first thing about jujitsu, but could you describe that? You know, I walk for exercise, but could you describe what jujitsu is and how you use that to help disabled veterans?
Sure. Jujitsu is it's like wrestling. It is a combat sport that has the warrior ethos as part of its culture. So it's something that military people can relate to very easily. We all know about the physiological benefits of fitness and why that's important for our mental health. But with jujitsu, there's an added component to that. I think any recreational activity is great for veterans, but jujitsu is a little different. When you're suffering from PTSD or anxiety or depression, you often get stuck in a rumination loop, which is basically a thought process where you're trying to solve some kind of problem, but you never find the solution. That causes and contributes very heavily to anxiety and depression. And what jujitsu does is, because you're actively trying to stop someone from choking you in this fight you're having, you reset that loop. If you're worried about what you experienced overseas, or you're worried about bills, or you're worried about your family and things just aren't going right, or finding a job, when you're in the gym, that fight or flight system that's been activated by all those thoughts is now being used the way it was intended to fight off an attacker. And now you're doing it in a safe environment where people respect your decision to stop the fight through a submission or through tapping out. And what that does is that resets this biological fight or flight system. You're using it the way it was intended to defend yourself. And those things you were thinking about, they stop because you're only thinking about winning that fight. And it sort of resets the system in a way that when you repeat it over and over, complements more traditional therapies. They say about 60 hours on the mat is where you can start to see measurable improvements in people's depression and anxiety after they start jujitsu. And that's not just military. I mean, that's something everyone benefits from. It works really well with military people because of that warrior component to it, and that combat component to it, but it's in a safe environment.
So, sir, can you walk me through an example? Let's say that I'm a disabled veteran. I've just gotten out of the service. I've got PTSD. I'm kind of down and out. I hear about this, and I'm saying, well, I can't afford to join the gym, and I don't know how that's going to help me. How would you talk a veteran through that? How would you convince him that you can help?
Well, first of all, we'd send them to our website, which is wedefyfoundation.org. And on there, we do have testimonials and some videos that kind of allow people to tell their stories about where they were before they started and where they are now. And I think that that's one of the most compelling things about this practice in the community is we all have a story, and everyone is dealing with something. And when you're alone and you've isolated yourself and you're having trouble trusting people again and finding a place you fit, seeing that other people have had success with something is a big help. And I think that's the first step. And then the second step is applying for the scholarship. And if you're selected, the third step is going to the gym. And, you know, to be successful in this, all you have to do is show up. And everything else is going to take care of itself. The gym is going to take care of you. The community is going to be you're going to build bonds there, but it's on these individuals to take responsibility again and to find that sense of purpose they had in the military. And I firmly, firmly believe, from seeing how this impacts our other benefit or our other recipients, that it will allow them to make steps forward that they may have struggled on their own with.
We're speaking with retired Lieutenant Colonel T.J. Kreitzer about the We Defy Foundation on Minnesota Military Radio. So, sir, as I was listening there, they go to the website, they can see some testimonial. If they say, well, that's worked for them, it could work for me, so then they apply to We Defy Foundation, and then you step up and put them in a program, and I'm assuming you raise some funds and you use the funds to help these veterans. Could you just walk me through that a little bit more, sir?
Sure. We are a nonprofit, and we do raise funds. A lot of it's done through the jiu-jitsu community with jiu-jitsu-style events. But as we've grown, one of our great challenges is breaking outside of jiu-jitsu. I think, you know, we are a veterans organization, but we do kind of have a niche modality here with using jiu-jitsu. So that although the jiu-jitsu community is learning who we are, breaking out of that and getting into grants and maybe the combined federal campaign, things like that are all on our plate to try to help people outside jiu-jitsu become aware of who we are and what we're offering to our veterans that we sponsor.
So, sir, are you looking for volunteers? Are you looking for donations? How can our listeners help the We Defy Foundation?
The easiest way to help is to go online to our website, find the Donate Now button, and make a donation there, because that money will go towards these scholarships. 2019, that's the last year we have our taxes complete from, and 84% of our funds went towards programming. That means going directly into the scholarships and into the uniforms and things like that. The other 16% was our overhead, which for a nonprofit is astounding that we keep the prices that low. And we do it because it's a completely volunteer-run organization with very minimal contracted costs. We do also look for ambassadors if people want to be involved with us, helping us raise funds, participating, even with the running of the foundation, because it's, again, run by volunteers. So we need that help. We need people to do that. And you can go on the website and do this, you know, send me an email and I'll get in contact with you and send you to the right place for an ambassador application. And then if there's gyms that want to be involved and help our recipients with the scholarships, that's another way they can contact us as well. And those are the businesses that we send the tuition to for those veteran recipients.
So the website is the WeDefyFoundation.org. And Colonel, sounds like you found another mission.
I have. It's a great way to give back after it was time for me to close out my military service.
Well, Colonel, I appreciate you taking some time today to tell us about the We Defy Foundation, and keep up the great work, sir. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I really appreciate you having me on.
You're welcome, sir. That was retired Air Force Lieutenant Colonel T.J. Kreitzer speaking about the We Defy Foundation. Joining me now from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System is Director Pat Kelly. Director Kelly, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Thanks for having me back.
Sir, I was out there to visit by appointment last week and got my flu shot and my COVID booster, and everything went fine. And last time you were on, we were talking about that, and you indicated that the VA will call you. Well, you were right. My primary care doctor called me and said, get in for an appointment. And by the way, we're scheduling your shots. And I think I was in there and out of there in 20 minutes.
Well, good. I'm glad it worked out okay for you. You know, we're encouraging everybody, you know, to get their, of course, to get their flu vaccine. It's really a good idea. We haven't seen, you know, flu activity yet here at the medical center, but we're, you know, really keeping our fingers crossed that we have another flu season like last season. I think because everybody was masked up and protected, it was a pretty good season. But, you know, we were out for a little while. It's been a pretty good uptake, you know, of veterans coming in and getting their vaccines. So we went through our allocation. We are now back up to having everything that we need. And so we encourage veterans to see their primary care doctor, get a flu vaccine. And if you come in to get your COVID vaccine, if you're called in to get your COVID booster, we'll take care of that at the same time that you're in for your booster. So you can knock them both off at the same time.
Well, that was a question I want to ask you, sir, is I didn't know if you're using Tom as a guinea pig or not, you know, given his flu vaccine and then also the booster. So you're saying it's safe. Go ahead and get them both done at the same time.
Yeah, Doug, what we have learned, and again, as the science has kind of evolved on this, we weren't sure the first time we were given the initial doses of the vaccine, and really because it was so new, we didn't give them at the same time. But we have subsequently learned that there is no issue at all getting both your flu vaccine and your COVID vaccine. So we would not use Tom as a guinea pig, although he'd be a good one, but we strictly have learned based on the science that it's really easy. And it will not increase, it will not induce additional side effects or anything. So, yeah, we encourage people to do that at the same time if they're both available to you.
Sir, October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Are there some activities going on around that?
Well, you know, breast cancer services is a big deal for us because, you know, we have, you know, large number of women veterans, an increasing number of women veterans. So a couple of years ago, we stood up what we refer to as our comprehensive breast care services. And so women veterans are are free, you know, when it comes time for their annual breast exam, if they want to just walk into our imaging department downstairs, and you know, we have some really high-speed, super good diagnostic mammography equipment downstairs, and a really good staff with lots of trained and certified and fellowship-trained radiologists down there who do breast imaging. And so, you know, it's a time, you know, sort of this time of year, this month, where we just want to remind our women veterans that, you know, even even sometimes younger veterans can be at risk for breast cancer. And so we, you know, sort of in consultation with your primary care doctor or women's clinic here or their primary care doctor, we're encouraging women veterans to get screened. And again, when you do that, our team here, you know, we have the radiologists and the pathologists, and we do reconstructive surgery here if that's needed. You know, we do the whole package. And so it's just that this is Comprehensive Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So women veterans should be thinking about that, and we can take care of them right here.
Sir, we just have a couple of seconds left, but I want to make sure we get this announcement. And I understand that you had a big ribbon cutting for some outpatient clinics in Hibbing and Ely. Can you tell us about that real quick?
Yeah, so on October 8th, we culminated, which was you know, a couple years' worth of planning at our two northernmost clinics, one in Hibbing, Minnesota, one in Ely, where we expanded those clinics brand new. The clinics themselves have been in those locations, but these are really sort of high-speed, much better, newer, all the right equipment, all the right technology. And so we had Congressman Stauber was there with us and a good representation of county veteran service officers, and we cut a ribbon and opened those two new locations, and everything is working really well, both Hibbing and Ely. And so we've opened a lot of new clinics lately. Those are our two most recent ones.
Very good, sir. Thanks for joining us again today.
Thank you, Tom.
That was Director Pat Kelly from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Eric Jackson, T.J. Kretzer, Director Pat Kelly from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, Commissioner Larry Herkey, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Sean Mankey. Please join us next week as we talk about our local Armed Forces Service Center and the history of the 133rd Airlift Wing. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.